It's to improve TSA's counterterrorism focus through intelligence and cutting-edge technology. But I do have two other important goals, and those are to support the TSA workforce, and then third, to strengthen TSA's relationship with stakeholders and the traveling public. So those are my top three priorities.
What do you mean about strengthening the relationship?
So one of the issues that comes to bear is how TSA rules and regulations and policy affect not only the traveling public, but the stakeholders, whether it's the airlines or the airports or general aviation or cargo shippers, all these other businesses that are impacted by TSA. So making sure that there are open lines of communication, dialogue between those stakeholders and TSA.
Is that an issue that's been ongoing since the beginning of TSA, where there's
Sure.
that communication problem?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a problem. I just want to strengthen it, and obviously TSA, without a confirmed administrator in the last 18 months, this gives me an opportunity as the new person to reach out and meet with, for example, last week I met with CEOs of two major airlines and a hotel chain. So the idea of how is the traveling public and the airlines, how are they impacted, met with the movers and shakers of the general aviation community 2 weeks ago with Secretary Napolitano in Oshkosh. I've had a number of other meetings. I'm doing a series of town halls around the country with TSA employees to hear what their concerns are, what their issues, what's working well for them, and then what barriers are there to them doing their job to make TSA a great place to work. So a number of outreach opportunities like that.
Sure, TSA employees, the whole workforce, really do want to hear from you and learn
Sure.
more about you, because one of the big issues that they've been dealing with, the issue of collective bargaining rights.
Right.
Where does that stand? What happens with that now?
So I'm doing an assessment, as I was asked to do before I took the job, if confirmed. I was asked to do an assessment of the pros and cons of collective bargaining as it may impact the men and women of TSA, but the overarching mission of TSA. And so that's when I describe these town halls that I'm having around the country and meeting with employees. I'm hearing from them firsthand how they believe collective bargaining would either help or not help them, and really what their issues are as to the best way that TSA can do the job that the American people expect of them in terms of providing security while also having that customer service aspect and responsibility also. So that's part of, so I'm doing an assessment, and at some point I will then make a decision or recommendation depending on how that goes, and then we'll move forward from there.
Getting into the more philosophical realm of what it is you have to do, I've talked to others who have been up for the position and others who have observed that confirmation process. Mm. And in the position that you hold now, I'm hearing from a lot of different people, you need to be politically astute and savvy without being political. Mm. How do you walk that tightrope? What sort of advice would you give to others who also have to walk that fine line?
Well, first, I'm not sure I would recommend anybody go through the vetting, nomination, and confirmation process. That can be a challenging process. I was very fortunate, obviously, to get through that and with support that I did. So that being said, obviously, you have to be sensitive to the issues that the policies and decisions that I would make or anybody in my position makes, again, that affects the commerce, the free movement of goods and people around this great country of ours, while providing the best possible security using the latest technology, techniques, tactics, training, all those things that can impact that quality. So it is a politically sensitive position, because some of the decisions that I make or somebody in my position may not be popular with people from the standpoint of providing security, but is important in my judgment based on my background and experience of what needs to be done to focus on a counterterrorism mission that TSA was created for.
When a lot of people hear about TSA, they immediately think of screening at airports, screening people. But
right.
You also have to screen domestic cargo. And you've reached a milestone of scanning 100% of all domestic cargo on passenger planes. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, Amy. As of August 1, due to some exceptional work by the men and women of TSA, engaging with a number of private partners through the Certified Cargo Screening Program, we did meet that August 1 milestone, and so all cargo going on passenger flights here in the U.S. is now screened, and so that is a great accomplishment and really closes a gap that had existed in terms of possible terrorist opportunities to cause problems. Obviously, the follow-up then is on the international side, where we've also reached a milestone of conducting 100% screening of all high-risk cargo on passenger planes. And then we are closing the gap with our partners around the world through a number of different initiatives, including the International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, that is meeting next month. Secretary Napolitano and I will be attending that, where she's done a lot of great work in terms of outreach post December 25th, the attempted attack by Abdulmutallab, to engage international partners. Both she and the Deputy Secretary, Jane Lute, went on worldwide missions to engage and elicit the support of the civil aviation community and the governments to ensure that their safety and screening security standards are sufficient and up to par with the U.S. And so there's a significant meeting in Montreal next month that I mentioned that will help confirm some of those efforts under the U.N. effort there. So
we're talking with TSA Administrator John Pistol. I want to touch on the issue of imaging technology. There's some concerns there when it comes to not just security, but privacy issues. You know,
sure.
Some of those screeners where you can walk through and you're essentially naked. So let's talk a bit about that and,
sure.
and ensuring the public's right to privacy while keeping them secure. That another tightrope you have to walk.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, and just philosophically, what I want to make sure we are doing is using the latest technology to identify and disrupt potential threats, and that we're not using that technology to address yesterday's threats. So that's one thing that I'm focused on, is looking at what is the cutting-edge technology, what's the next generation iteration of that technology, and currently the advanced imaging technology that you reference is the best available, I believe, based on what I've seen, in terms of identifying the possible terrorist concealment techniques and devices such as the individual on Christmas Day. That being said, there are people who have privacy concerns, and I want to be sensitive to those. And what I have seen in terms of the construct is that it addresses the privacy concerns in the best possible way, in that the transportation security officer who is doing the screening with the person never sees the image that is projected. The TSO, the officer who sees the image, never actually sees the person. And the machines that we are using do not have the software capability when we acquire them to retain those images. So there was some conflating of information last week in one particular article that said that the U.S. Marshals have that capability in their handling of prisoners, which is obviously a whole different issue than the Federal Air Marshals, which I think they are confusing the issue with, which are not involved in that either. So it's, of course, Federal Air Marshals part of TSA. So given those safeguards, and of course no phones with cameras or cameras, anything are allowed in the screening area or in the viewing room.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no way of either maintaining that image or transmitting it. And before you can go to the next image, that one then is deleted. So there's no retention, there's no transmittal. So again, I want to be sensitive to those who have those privacy concerns. At the same time, recognizing it is the best technology available today. Now, that being said, we're exploring other technology. There are some that are in use in airports around the world, at least in selective airports, that get away from the image altogether, automated target recognition, ATR, that basically has a stick figure with an algorithm that identifies any abnormalities. And so we're looking at that in terms of another possibility, which would be basically a software modification to the existing machine. So you don't have to go out and buy new advanced imaging technology machines. You just do a software modification. So a number of opportunities to, again, provide the best possible safety for the traveling public while ensuring that their privacy is afforded the best protection.
As I listen to you talk and as you answer these questions, I'm sensing this recurring theme. You've mentioned things like partnerships and communication and engaging
right.
with public and private sector and all of these other issues. It all sounds like it comes under that umbrella heading of information sharing. And I'm wondering if that is part of your philosophy as you take on this new challenge. Is information sharing really that critical?
Well, it is, Amy. I mean, information sharing is the bedrock of our effective mission in terms of being able to hear from stakeholders, hear from those who are affected by our policies and procedures, our rules and regulations, and then to make sure that we are informing them in the best possible way of, okay, here's the reason we're doing things. For example, we're talking about doing a why campaign. So why do we still have to take our shoes off? You know, for a lot of the traveling public today, especially teenagers and those who were not around, say, in December of 01 when Richard Reed tried to light his shoes on fire on that flight from Paris to Miami and got diverted to Boston, they might not be familiar with the type of explosive that he had and the fact that he actually did that. And so just reaffirming for everybody that, yeah, here's the reason we're doing things. There may seem to be some unpredictability about the way we do things, and that's a good thing on the one hand because we don't want terrorists, become predictable to terrorists. So that's a big part of, and just open, frequent communication with all the stakeholders is something that I think is just paramount to our success.
And those are all the questions that I have. Is there anything you would like to add, anything you'd like to throw out there?
No, it's just it's an honor and privilege to be in this position, and it really takes a partnership. You know, we're doing within DHS is if you see something, say something initiative, which it really comes down to common sense, which has been out there for years in my prior job, but really just the opportunity for everybody to be engaged in the effort to provide the best possible security for all avenues of transportation. So we've obviously talked a lot about aviation. There are other areas out there. In fact, I'm in Boston right now for a safety and security summit as it relates to non-aviation. So rail, passenger rail, buses, and those, as we know from around the world, are vulnerable areas. And so we're trying to focus our efforts on what else can we do to help support state and local authorities who have the primary responsibility in those areas. So it's a broad mission set with really a heavy dependence upon the other stakeholders.